SiriusXM presents Stanford Pathfinders.
Stanford has 225,000 alumni living all over the globe in 151 countries, and they're some of the most amazing people you would ever want to meet.
A show about how the graduates of Stanford University are changing our lives and the world.
We'll hear very interesting things from business leaders in the technology sector, but well beyond that, the worlds of politics, entertainment, business, and beyond.
Inspiring stories from America's innovation heartland.
It's a place where people look to the future, not to the past, where they don't rest on their laurels. Think about the gold rush. Think about Stanford being formed in the late 1800s. And then Stanford was the beginning of Silicon Valley. And the ethos of Silicon Valley is deeply embedded in the Stanford spirit. It's a spirit of innovation, experimentation. It's a spirit of being willing to try new things and risk failure as long as you fail forward.
Welcome to Stanford Pathfinders.
Today on Stanford Pathfinders, an alumna who's working tirelessly to give students a different experience.
A recent Gallup poll showed that 96% of college presidents will say their kids are ready for the workforce. 11% of employers agree.
A woman who knows the importance of spending time in the real world before settling in on campus.
It's about leaving your comfort zone. It's about getting proximate to some of the world's most intractable challenges. It's about being part of a cohort of peers that reflect the world's diversity.
This week on Stanford Pathfinders, founder and CEO of Global Citizen Year, Abby Falick. Now here's your host, Howard Wolf.
25 years after being admitted to Stanford as an undergraduate, I had occasion to be reintroduced to Fred Hargadon, the dean who admitted me. This was a special moment for me as he had fundamentally changed my life by his actions as dean. When I politely asked him if he somehow remembered my application for admission from so many years ago, he responded affirmatively, making my chest puff out with pride. He was quick to add, however, that he remembered my application for one very special reason. He remembered every admission mistake he had ever made while dean at Stanford. So much for pride. No matter his admission mistakes, Fred Hargadon became known as the dean of all admission deans, having served for more than 30 years at Stanford and then Princeton. He had strong opinions on all matters related to undergraduate admissions to college. And one of these strong opinions has stuck in my mind for years. Fred was a huge believer in the benefits of students taking a gap year between high school and college. In fact, he once told me that colleges and universities should require all admitted students to do so. It's a bold idea. It's a bold idea that will probably never happen, but it's certainly a bold idea worth discussion. Today's guest on Stanford Pathfinders, Abby Falick, has 2 degrees from Stanford, a BA in International Development and a Master's in Education, both earned in 2001. She also went to Harvard, where she earned her MBA from the Harvard Business School in 2008. Abby is the founder and CEO of Global Citizen Year and an award-winning social entrepreneur. Global Citizen Year exists to make the global bridge year after high school, commonly known as a gap year, a common expectation and opportunity. Unlocking young people's potential and purpose is the passion that guides Abby's life and work. In other words, who better to help us understand why Stanford and Princeton Dean of Admission Fred Hargadon saw such promise in the concept of a gap year? Abby, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So what exactly is a gap year? And tell me about this bizarre obsession you have with gap years. So when did it start? And why is this idea so vitally important to you?
I have been obsessed with this stage of life, the transition from high school to college, since I finished high school. And I had done everything right. I was one of those excellent sheep who was doing all the right things. I'd been a good student. I'd gotten into Stanford. But I finished high school and I was exhausted. I was doing the right things without knowing the why. And I remember pausing to just consider what it would look and feel like to spend some time out in the real world outside of the classroom.
So this comes from a personal experience.
Deeply personal. And ever since I was 18 and literally finished high school and called the Peace Corps looking for some way to spend time in the real world.
Hold it. You called the Peace Corps after you finished high school?
I called the Peace Corps. In fact, I looked through the yellow pages to call the Peace Corps. And the answer I got was, little girl, go to college. We'll see you in 4 years. Because there wasn't an opportunity at that moment in time for somebody at my age and stage to spend a year out in the world doing something real, figuring out who I was and what got me up in the morning when there was no alarm clock, and who I was becoming, who I wanted to be when I was outside my comfort zone.
So what makes this year between high school and college so critical in the formation of a person's being, their life, their personality, whatever you might call it? It's sort of arbitrary, right? It just happens to happen when you're 18.
Well, it's not so arbitrary. So developmentally, we actually know the neuroscience shows that our brains are still the most elastic at that age. A young person, as they finish high school, has the maturity to leave home, but hasn't yet formed their sense of values and identity in any sort of fixed way. We work with one college dean who likes to joke that every kid takes a gap year. It's called freshman year. Which is kind of a joke, but it's actually kind of sobering as well, which is that we're sending kids straight from one stage of schooling into the next without necessarily time to pause or consider who they are and who they're becoming.
Hold on a second. So what I'm still catching up to what you just said. So many people say that the freshman year is the gap year
exactly.
De facto.
Exactly.
Not intended to be. But they end up using it that way. What does that mean?
That means
they're not taking advantage of what the university or college has to offer?
Exactly. They're spending that first year just getting oriented, figuring out who they are when they're outside of the context of where they grew up. And high school has become a high-stakes game to get into college. And kids who make it through, especially to the most selective schools, tend to be exhausted and burnt out. The system is oriented in a way that requires that you do everything perfectly, that you're moving through the motions, you're checking things off a list. And more often than not, when kids get to college, and particularly to a school like Stanford, they may be wildly overprepared in certain capacities, academically and sort of in terms of their study skills, but totally underprepared socially and emotionally. Most of these kids have never been encouraged to follow their curiosity because they're afraid they might fail. And frankly, failure is not on that checklist. So kids haven't had opportunities to leave their comfort zones, to explore what they're genuinely and authentically interested in when it's not something that's going to go on their resume. And as a result, kids get to college kind of grappling, looking for that sense of purpose, but often totally disoriented. And we see that in what's happening on college campuses across the country.
So let's unpack this a little bit because I want to make sure that we don't conflate some things. So on the one hand, students are exhausted at the end of high school as they went through that process to get into college.
You couldn't not be.
Right? So is part of the idea of a gap year to recharge?
Absolutely. The idea is, as lives get longer, the notion that we would put all of your formal schooling and training up against the front end of that front first quarter of your life makes less and less sense. There are cultures and religions around the world that have recognized for generations that this age, this developmental sweet spot at age 18, can be a rite of passage. And yet in America, traditionally, we're in such a race to get to some imaginary finish line that we send kids from school straight into more school without encouraging them to pause. One of the things that we're really focused on is reimagining what the gap year can be. And frankly, it starts with the language we use. A gap is a terrible metaphor.
Like a gap and a smile is not a very pretty picture.
Yeah, or a gap between two mountaintops. The idea that you would send kids into a gaping hole that they may or may not come out of is not the rallying cry for a new generation.
So in my intro, I talked about Fred Hargadon, the former dean of admission here at Stanford and at Princeton, and his desire that everyone take a gap year. And I've shared that story with a number of people over the years. Here's what I'm hearing from the two different constituencies. Parents are freaked out that their kid will take a gap year and then decide never to go to college. That's that. And then students come at it from the opposite polar end and they say, but if I take a gap year, I'll fall behind, as if it's a race that ends at some point in time and they don't want to fall behind in the race. Are those the two main criticisms that you get from parents and students to the gap year concept?
Those are the two main criticisms we get, and they're both totally bogus.
Bogus.
And it starts with the language that we use.
So Did I use bad language?
Well, as long as we continue to call it a gap year, people will be afraid of falling into a gap. But if we can shift the metaphor and shift the language, we like to call it a launch year. This is an experience that doesn't leave you behind. It lands you a world ahead. And we're getting to a point when parents should be concerned not that they're going to disadvantage their kids by giving them this year to explore themselves in the world, but that you're disadvantaging your kid if you send them straight to college.
So what's the vernacular we should be using? Is it bridge year? What is it that you use?
I like the launch year. I think it gives
a launch year.
And this came from a parent of a fellow in Global Citizen Year. This was a father who's a lawyer in Palo Alto who was very, very concerned about his kid getting off track before he went to Brown. And his father had to be convinced that this was a good idea. Jake took off, spent a year with us in Ecuador, came back, and has thrived ever since. He's pursued a really entrepreneurial both education and career. And his father said to me a few years after Jake had come back, you know what? I look around in this community in particular, and my kid had the best launch of any family in town.
Okay, so how do you respond to what I know must be the critique from many that these gap years, bridge years, launch years are just another privilege for wealthy students to sort of pad their resumes and make them look better on LinkedIn?
Historically, gap years have been exclusive to kids who come from privileged backgrounds. It's been an opportunity that you're able to take if you have a safety net or if you have a family who has resources and, frankly, they can pay for a fancy travel program or hook you up with internships around the world. At Global Citizen Year, we are leading by example to change that paradigm. We're set up as a not-for-profit. We admit the highest potential kids we can find from America and around the world, and then we provide financial aid on a sliding scale. So it's a need-blind admissions process.
Much like many universities.
Exactly. And to date, more than two-thirds of our participants have participated on some level of financial aid
that
allows them to join us. 50% of our fellows are Pell Grant eligible when they get to college, and more than 50% self-identify as young people of color. And we're very proud of this because in order to model what this year can be when it becomes the new norm and a rite of passage, we need to be very, very deliberate about shaping who's included and what the nature of the experience can be.
Now, I have to imagine that when you describe to people what you do for a living and that you founded this nonprofit and this is your passion, this is your mission, people will say, well, that sounds a lot like Peace Corps. How does what you are doing differ from Peace Corps? I mean, couldn't a student just wait till they're done with college and go do Peace Corps?
We're missing an opportunity every time we wait till a junior year abroad or until after you've finished college. We all know that these experiences, when done by design and not by default, become the most formative part of your education. It was absolutely my experience. I went straight to Stanford because I couldn't find something like Global Citizen Year in the transition. But I ended up, after 2 years here, stopping out and spending a year in Latin America.
Stopping out, for those who are listening and aren't a part of the Stanford community, stopping out is like dropping out, but not really.
Exactly.
You don't really have to drop out. You just kind of take a little leave
of absence. Then you come back when you're ready. And I was ready the next year.
I stopped out. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And did you have a good experience?
I took a quarter off and traveled throughout the Middle East and Europe. The answer is yes, I had a wonderful experience.
Well, my experience, and maybe it's similar to yours, is that that time away from campus ended up being the most important part of my education, and it had nothing to do with my formal education. And I took that time during the equivalent of my junior year when a lot of my friends and peers were studying abroad. And I remember coming back to campus and looking around and thinking, how crazy that we would wait this long, because suddenly we're back with confidence, clarity, a sense of purpose for our education. And why in the world should we not be encouraging every young person to have an experience like this at the front end of
college? Let me push back, though. There's that old saying that education is wasted on the young. Mm-hmm. And here I work at a university, so obviously I don't believe that. But at the same time, is this the best time for them to be doing it at 18? I mean, couldn't this be more valuable at 20 or 22 or 25? I mean, you talked about neuroscience earlier, elasticity and plasticity of the brain. Maybe the brain's a little bit more formed later. Maybe these are better experiences to have then.
Here's another way to think about it.
I'm wrong, is I guess what you're saying.
Return on investment. So higher education.
Okay, so you went to Harvard Business School. So now you're going to hit me with ROI.
I am. Well, sometimes this clicks, maybe for somebody like you. But to think about the investment that we make in a young person's education, it's astronomical. And the idea, whether as a parent or as a financial aid officer, that we would provide that financial investment before the student knows what they're there to focus on just makes no sense. A recent Gallup poll showed that 96% of college presidents residents will say their kids are ready for the workforce. 11% of employers agree.
A little bit of a mismatch there.
Just a little bit. And we believe that if you step back and think about changing the inputs to the system, if we can deliver a set of kids who aren't burnt out, but they're driven by burning questions, we can change the outcomes of the college experience. Without needing to reinvent all of college, we can just change the students.
So do the students apply to college, get in, and then defer, or do they go not apply to college, do a program like this, and then apply while in the program?
Typically, students will apply to college during their senior year, as they normally
do.
Would. They spend a year with Global Citizen Year.
And so they've already accepted a position at one university they've deferred.
And the schools are delighted to grant that deferral.
All right, so let's talk about that. How do universities and colleges look at a gap year program like yours or others? Is that something they think, oh my gosh, this is fantastic, or we're worried the kid's never going to show up, or maybe they'll go off on the wrong vector? What do universities and colleges think of programs like these?
The colleges love it.
They love them.
If they admit you now, they will want you even more a year from now when you come back having had a real-world experience. I envision a day when this becomes a requirement to get into college and an expectation of your employer when they look at your resume and they say, what do you mean you went straight to college? So we're seeing, you know, schools from Stanford and Harvard include in their admissions letters an option to just check a box to enroll the following year. There are schools like Princeton and Tufts, University of North Carolina, that are paying kids to take this year before they enroll because they know that they get the types of students who are going to thrive on campus and beyond. These are the kids that give them bragging rights over time.
How much of this is just universities wanting their otherwise freshmen to be somewhere else to get their yah-yahs out for the first time they've ever lived away from home?
Colleges are spending a huge amount of time and energy and resource on, as we talked about, preparing freshmen for college. Sat recently with the dean of the undergraduate experience at Harvard, who said that freshman year, essentially the goal is to get their kids ready for college. So the opportunity for a young person to have an experience outside of the freshman dorm and off campus, where they are able to mature, learn to live independently, but at the same time develop some productive skills and a perspective on themselves in the world that then creates the blueprint for how they're going to approach college, it changes everything about how those students land when they are then ready to enroll.
So give us a sense for some of the experiences your Global Citizen Year students have had during this launch year. I mean, a country they've gone to, work they've done, nonprofit work they've done. Give us a sense. Give us some real specific examples to this very amorphous concept that we've been discussing.
So to make it very concrete, we are
There's the word I was searching for,
concrete. Let's make it concrete. We're a leadership school. So we recruit and select high potential young people from across country and around the world, and we take them through a school year-long leadership course that actually starts and ends with a training at Stanford. So they do a week of a boot camp here before they then break up into country teams. We have teams who we've hired and trained on the ground in the countries where we operate, currently Ecuador, Brazil, Senegal, and India. So our fellows arrive, they go through an intensive local orientation, and then we place them with a homestay family, a family that we've selected and vetted to host each fellow, and they're placed as what we call an apprentice working in support of a local project. Now, this is different also from traditional study abroad. Our kids aren't surrounded by other Americans, they're not in school, and they're also not there to provide a service. This isn't volunteerism. We're really deliberate about this language that suggests you're there to observe, you're there to learn, and you're there to figure out how to make a meaningful contribution over time, but not on arrival.
And what would be a project example?
Broadly, the experiences are in the field of education, health, and the environment. So you might be an assistant teacher in a public school in Pune, India. You might be assisting an environmental conservation project in the Amazon in Brazil. You might be helping to deliver babies in a maternity ward in Senegal.
Am I too old to sign up?
You are not, Howard. We would welcome you. But I will say, in all seriousness, I get this question all the time from peers and our supporters, who everybody's sort of craving this experience of leaving your comfort zone and spending time in a place and context that can just just shake up our perspective about what we care about.
So you look for leadership in the candidates that you select. How do you determine leadership? How do you find leadership? How do you assess leadership? I mean, colleges find this very difficult, and I imagine you would too.
We do, and we're also coming at it in a different way than a traditional college admissions process, in that we're not looking at grades or test scores. So we are looking for evidence that a young person has been curious, has been persuasive, and has inspired other people to follow their lead. We're looking at where you started and what you've done with the context and resources that you've had access to. And so this means that not everybody has had a great writing program, so you can submit your application as a written essay or as a video response if you want. There's a behavioral interview that we use in our screening process. And all of this together gives us a holistic sense of who are the young people who we want to take a bet on, because we believe that they will be most formed by this experience, and they will take it and run with it. It will inform their leadership, not just in college, but over the course of their lives.
This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf. More with Global Citizen Year founder and CEO Abby Fallick next on Sirius XM Insight 121. This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf, and I'm speaking with Global Citizen Year founder and CEO, Abby Fallick. So your nonprofit is not the only one that plays in this space. There are many, many programs, not like yours, but of a gap year, launch year, bridge year nature. What are the trends that you're seeing? Is this growing in popularity? Is this something that, as you said earlier, you want everyone to do this? Where are we going?
From where I sit, and I've been fixated on this space now for two decades.
Obsessed is a word I would probably use.
It's fair. There is an inevitability that it will become normal and encouraged and expected that young people take this year in some form before they go to college. And
So 20 years from now.
20 years from now.
You think 90% of all students going to college will have done a bridge year?
100%.
100%.
Absolutely, in one form or another. And it will look a lot like the way that the professional schools have changed their admissions practices.
Oh, business schools used to let students right out of college. Now they ask them to go get work experience for, when I went 2 years, now it's 3-4 years
exactly.
At least.
Exactly, because why would you ever admit somebody before they know how to make use of your institution? So it is quickly moving in that direction. Our commitment at Global Citizen Year is to shape what we mean by this year. It starts with changing the language and the metaphor. It starts by defining what this year is and what it's not. It's not just put on a backpack and travel around Europe with your friends. It's about leaving your comfort zone. It's about getting proximate to some of the world's most intractable challenges. It's about being part of a cohort of peers that reflect the world's diversity, and not just carrying your homogenous bubble with you wherever you go. And when all of these elements are in place, we're positioned to shape a new rite of passage that launches our next generation of leaders.
It's too bad you're not passionate about this.
I know. It's hard to get up in the morning and go to work every day.
Well, let's switch gears and talk a little bit about that. So you're an entrepreneur in your own right.
I am.
You're a social innovator, and you chose to be an entrepreneur in the nonprofit space. Being a builder of a business is tough enough as it is. Doing it in the social space, in the nonprofit space, makes it doubly hard.
I appreciate that recognition, because I think often we think of the social impact work as the soft stuff. And in many ways, it's even harder, because I have to run my business and run a fundraising business on the side. But for me, nonprofit, for-profit is actually not a useful distinction. I think of 501c3 as our tax status, but it doesn't say anything about—
But you chose to make it a nonprofit entity as opposed to a for-profit entity. Was that because you just didn't think it was viable as a for-profit entity, or because you thought that the mission aligned better with the nonprofit status?
I wanted us to be crystal clear. I hate the term nonprofit. All it says is what you're not. It doesn't say what you're for. And so I think of us as a for-social impact corporation, essentially. And the reality is, people talk about double bottom lines. And when push comes to shove, one line is on the bottom. I wanted us to be able to value every time the highest potential kids we could find, the best quality experience we could give them. And so we chose to set ourselves up to look more like a university than a for-profit company.
As people listen to this show, there are two cohorts that I'm fascinated by. One cohort are the cohorts of parents who are listening to this saying, I wonder if that would be good for my daughter, my son. And the other cohort are young people in high school right now who are wondering, huh, I wonder if that's something I should consider. So give me the message that you would give parents who you think should consider this as sort of your elevator pitch to parents, why you should consider something like Global Citizen Year. And then take a breath and then do that same thing for students who are currently in high school.
As a parent myself, I think about this a lot. I think about what the future might look like and how I'm going to prepare my young boys with the skills that enable them to be flexible and adaptable to what the workplace will be, which will be jobs that haven't been invented yet. So to parents, I would say, if you believe, as I do, that young people need to develop uniquely human skills like empathy, self-awareness, resilience, creativity,
the EQ sort of the ledger.
Yes, that we used to call soft skills, but I think we should rebrand as power skills. We can't diminish these things anymore at an age when—
So words matter in the way that we describe these things.
Deeply, deeply. And so when we think about what it will take to help a young person develop a more holistic set of skills and abilities, frankly, most of that learning is not going to happen in a classroom. So the greatest advantage you can give your kid is to give them the opportunity to develop those skills when they are 18 as the foundation for how they'll orient for the rest of their life.
So parents, give your child a gift that will pay dividends for the rest of his or her life.
You got it.
Give them a launch year. Then the students who are desperate to get into college. They just want to get away and go. They don't want to fall behind. What do you tell them?
For students who are afraid of missing out, FOMO is very real.
Fear of missing out.
In fact, that was what held me back from not having the confidence and courage to take this year when I frankly should have. My message to you is that it's not a race. And I know it feels like it is, but in a short period of time, you will find that taking this year lands you ahead, not behind. This isn't getting off track or stepping off the track. In fact, by staying on that track, you will disadvantage yourself over the long term. You will have a long life with many opportunities to do things that challenge and stretch you. And the sooner you can take this first leap of faith and have an experience that just helps you see who you are when you're in an entirely new context, the stronger you'll be, the more courageous you'll feel, the happier you'll be, and the more meaningful and purposeful the rest of your life can be.
Abby, I think I'm going to leave my job at Stanford and go do a launch year. Thank you so much for being on the show.
We will welcome you, Howard. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Stanford Pathfinders on Sirius XM Insight. Listen to this and other episodes anytime, on demand, with the Sirius XM app.